And he's a bit of a muso, is our Robin Martin in Taranaki. Kia ora, Robin.
Oh, I'm a fan of Tom Scott, can tell you that. He performed at WOMAD last year, I think. It was quite interesting, actually, because it's he performed on the Brooklyn stage next to the VIP tent. And, man, does he kind of got stuck into people who might have a bit of money to spend. And you could watch people of a certain age disappearing stage left, if you get my drift.
There you go. Now, speaking of Brooklands, it's the zoo that's in focus as your council, along with all the others, grapples with their long-term plan, their 10-year plan.
Yeah, you know, you're dead right. There's a few interesting ones I've written this morning about the cricket pavilion at the other side of Pukekura Park, which Brooklands Park is attached to. But today we're focused on Brooklyn Zoo. Now, Brooklyn Zoo gets, I think, 135,000 visitors a year. It's a free zoo, the only free zoo in the country. It's a bit of a cross between a petting zoo, playground, and a zoo which has exotic birds, monkeys, meerkats. So it's a bit of a catch-all, hugely popular here. 30 species I've got written down here, 90 individual animals. Now, in the long-term plan, they're asking residents to give their opinion on a couple of different options. One is a $9 million rebuild in this first 10-year phase. Another is a $5.7 million rebuild. And both of those would meet, you know, the council's saying they need to make these changes to meet zoo regulations, or they could be threatened with closing down. And one of the other options, of course, is to do nothing, which would mean closing the zoo down. Now, I can't see that happening. There'd be an outcry. We might actually get people on the street about that. And one of the curious things in this plan is they mentioned that enclosures need to be on eye level. I'd never really heard of this before. But yeah, it's in the documentation, and you can go off and look at zoo accreditation type organisations, and they do talk about this. Now, at Brooklyn Zoo in particular, we have an otter enclosure. Now, the otters are, you know, they're active, they fish out there in front of everybody. Now, they're in what's described as a pit style enclosure, where you look down upon them. Now, this is kind of frowned upon, apparently. But to change our otter enclosure to one where you'd be on eye level, say, like we might get a really cool pool where you could see them swimming. That would be great. I'd be up for that. But this would cost, it's in the budget for $1.5 million. So there are four otters. So that works at something like, you know, $300,000+ per otter to make that change. And also people are a bit perplexed about whether they really would need that. So I was at the zoo, and I spoke to Councillor Gordon Brown, who's kind of making a bit of noise about this, but also to some zoo visitors. And here's Malte Bohmer, a German visitor, who he was pondering what that would mean and if they really need this type of enclosure.
Like, to me, it doesn't feel odd to look from above, because I feel like it gives you pretty good overview of everything that's happening. I'm not too sure how the otters feel about that, to be honest. If it's weird for them, hard to judge. I don't know.
Malte Bohmer there. So that's an interesting bit of feedback there from a visitor. What did you do by means of following up on whether this modification is necessary, Robin? What did people tell you?
Yeah, so I spoke to the Zoo and Aquarium Association of Australia and New Zealand, which the Brooklyn Zoo is accredited to, and they said that the Brooklyn Zoo didn't need to make any changes, and in some cases these pit-style enclosures can be fantastic. But what they did say is that there is a move towards away from such enclosures and towards eye-level style displays, for want of a better word. And they say this fosters a better relationship between the zoo visitor, and it's not so dominating. I mean, as you can imagine, if you're over animals, it could spook them or is dominating. They said this was kind of an ethical, kind of moral area. And I also got in touch with MPI, who have a regulatory role here. That seemed to be more about some of its welfare, but also like that your animals don't get out. And they also said there was no requirement for the New Plymouth District Council to make this change.
All right. Let's have a look at the rogue billboards that are appearing in New Plymouth. Of what kind?
Yeah, no, this has been, getting a few laughs around town. Now, somebody has gone to the trouble of creating a digital billboard. It's kind of similar to the ones you might see on the highway. It's quite a bit smaller, but it gets parked up on the back of a ute, and it's got a digital display, and the signs is about five signs each time that kind of rotate. And they've parked this up at a couple of sites where there's been recent roadworks or there are currently roadworks going on, and they seem to be, tongue-in-cheek, poking a sharp stick in the direction of the New Zealand Transport Agency / Waka Kotahi. I never know whether it's an agency or an authority, Catherine. You know, those acronyms.
I've lost track.
Yeah. And so the first time they parked it up at Junction Road, where the Junction Road and the intersection with State Highway 3 heading south towards Inglewood from New Plymouth. And this was pointing, that there'd been trouble with some of the works they'd done there. And it would say, intersection roadworks brought to you by Waka Kotahi, and then, quality workmanship, and then a picture of potholes and road cones, all the kind of stuff that gets people's goat. Now, Waka Kotahi were slow to respond to this, because I've just been reading back through my stories and I've got a approach for comment. They did get back to me and talked about the plans they had for their road, and they'd had a few setbacks and it had taken longer. And then a couple of weeks later, this billboard appeared again at Breakwater Road in the city here. This is the main road to the port, so it is actually a state highway as well, State Highway 44, the second shortest in the country at 5.2 kilometres. And here it was kind of pointing out that there'd been this new asphalt laid, but the new asphalt seemed to have a whole lot of markings on it that indicated the council was likely to be coming back through and digging it up to do, plumbing type roadworks, services type work. I spoke to some people in the area, a worker, Andy, who was at a lifting company on Breakwater Road. Here's what he had to say about it.
Now that you've got all these services marked that have to go on a road that's being completed already. Oh, it's a bit of a waste of money, really, isn't it? If you're going to do it once, do it right.
There you go. That's a fair comment, and many people would agree with them.
Yeah, so I got this time Waka Kotahi responded quite a bit more quickly, and they thanked the person who'd put the billboard in place there for their interest, and went on to point out that the asphalt was a temporary fix on Breakwater Road that gets cut up really badly because of the logging trucks in particular, but all the port traffic. And they'd had some spare resources, so they put down about $120,000 worth of asphalt on the broken-up road as a temporary repair to alleviate the noise for people who lived in the neighbourhood, and that they were aware that the council had plans to do services work there, and they had been talking about it. That road will get ripped up again, and the council will come in and do their work, and then Waka Kotahi will come in after them. And in the meantime, we wait for our mystery billboard person to reveal themselves. And I'm looking forward to that myself.
They probably never will. Now, goodness, the seabed mining, there's been some quite dramatic shifts here, have there?
Yeah, since we last spoke, because we do seem to have to speak on this on a regular basis, Catherine. So this is Trans-Tasman Resources with their huge plans for mining the seabed off the coast of Pātia. We were in an Environmental Protection Authority process. We'd been through the first two days of hearings, and then TTR announced that they were pulling out. A little bit on the quiet. You kind of had to ask for the press release, which was three sentences, and they said it was complex and they would be updating their stakeholders in the future. I did catch up with Alan Eggers, the chairman of Trans-Tasman Resources, and he said that they were frustrated with the time the EPA process was taking and the scope of the investigation, which was a bit indicative of where he was going. he did say they were not looking or banking on the fast track process at that stage. The reaction from QEs against seabed mining and Greenpeace, two of the people who've been lobbying against this for years and years and years, along with Ngāti Rurinui, was that this, you know, was cowardly. They were going to lose at this hearing. They weren't going to get their consents granted, and that they were, you know, banking on the fast track process. And then lo and behold, I was on another job, and Kate Green from the Wellington newsroom picked up the story, and Trans-Tasman Resources had, I think, indicated in the Australian stock market that they'd been invited to apply for the fast track process. And then we had a kerfuffle there between the resource infrastructure minister, resources minister, Chris Bishop, saying, no, they had a generic letter. They're not, you know, higher on the list than any of the other, I think it's about 200 projects. Yeah, so now we're in the limbo land of waiting to see whether they will be fast-tracked or not.
Now, some good news to finish. Kiwi being released, record numbers, in fact.
Yeah, no, there's a pleasant afternoon up on Kaitaki. That's one of the ranges in the Te Papakura or Taranaki National Park. I saw about 13 or 16 kiwi released there in one go, and another 10 or so, or a similar number, were released on the western side of the range. So these are big numbers, and we've been having kiwi re-released into the national park in threes and fours over the last couple of years after massive work from the people doing pest control. But this time it was like 30 in a week, and it was going to be 110 birds inside 3 months, which is like a step change in the number of kiwi being released into our national park here. It's just fantastic news. A little bit of, you know, there's a threshold there for predation. We've lost a couple of birds in the recent years as the birds have gone back in, about four a year. One or two have migrated down onto the farmland and had to be pointed back in the right direction. But yes, it's great news and a huge feather in the cap of Taranaki Maunga project and the community efforts in the village of Okura on the western coast here, who've put in a huge effort trapping and many others. And these birds had come from South Waikato, from a sanctuary there, and there's more to come.
Fantastic. Robin, thank you so much. Robin Martin is RNZ's correspondent in Taranaki, reporter in Taranaki, based in New Plymouth.